Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Hacia, whose Executive Fellows Program provides Black and Latinx business owners with real-world tools and strategies needed to master fundamental management concepts related to company stability and growth. Registrants learn through one-on-one executive coaching sessions with subject matter experts in the areas of finance, business development, operations, and legal. More info at haciaworks.org.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita.
This week, we're talking with Stephanie Beatriz and Courtney Kosak, who are two rad ladies who also happen to be best friends and co-hosts of a relationship podcast called Reality Bites, which it's worth noting is Bites, like with a Y. Like,
because it's all about internetting. Mm-hmm.
We will talk to them about the podcast. We will also talk with one of the hosts, who is Stephanie Beatriz, who is also known as Rosa on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, about the fact that she is Rosa on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
And I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
We are very excited to talk to her about all of the things. We also have homework this week from Dory Greenspan, also known in the office as Dory the Cookie Lady. So stay tuned for that, too.
But first, let's talk a little about Brooklyn Nine-Nine and how it's kind of my favorite comedy on TV right now. I really love Veep. There's a few other things that I watch. But Brooklyn Nine-Nine is the show that really I make sure I watch every week because I always have at least a few laugh-out-loud moments with this show. It has some shared DNA with Parks and Rec and its creators and some of its writers.
And the feel, too, I think.
Yeah, it's got a lot of heart and it's very silly. It's about a workplace family, basically, cops in a precinct in Brooklyn. And it's a very diverse cast, which is something else I love about this show. Stephanie Beatriz and her co-star Melissa Fumero may be the only pair of Latinas on a network TV show right now, except for maybe Jane the Virgin. So that's pretty unique. And to give you a sense of what that sounds like in the precinct, here's a clip from a recent episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
So I believe the key to good teamwork is an equal exchange of ideas.
Stop. I know you already have a plan. And I want to win. So for the next 8 hours, I'm down with all your nerdy crap. Come on, Amy. Show me the binder.
Okay. But it's not a binder. It's a virtual binder, and it's encrypted on this flash drive.
That's my girl. Now, where's the 3D model of the precinct?
Inside the keychain. It's a freaking hologram.
Yes.
Rosa Diaz is the very deep voice in that scene that you were hearing, which, by the way, is not her normal speaking voice. So the Rosa you just heard from Brooklyn Nine-Nine is not the Stephanie you will hear in just a minute. Before we jump into our conversation with Stephanie and Courtney, here's just a little taste of what their podcast, Reality Bites, sounds like.
So we decided to start this podcast because we kept having these like massive conversations about our respective dating lives. At the time, I was in a very long-term relationship and Courtney was sort of exploring the dating world, and we would send each other these like screenshots of texts this is what I'm going through and this is what he said and then this is what happened. And
the whole experience kind of harkened back to the 90s movie, Reality Bites with an I.
We haven't seen it, is great.
So good. Everyone's angsty, looking for their partner.
It's singledom, but without this phone thing. So now it's the same thing still, right? We're all sort of searching for hopefully our life partner, but we have this big bad thing in the middle that's supposed to help us connect to people but really can turn us into like
monsters. Monsters.
I love that it's called Reality Bites with a Y, so you get that little play on the digital in there. But it is true, right, that it reminds me of, I think there's a quote from 30 Rock where Liz Lemon is talking to a teenager about this guy she's having relationship problems with, and she goes through this list of like, he didn't Snapchat me back and he didn't like my Instagram and then he ignored my text and blah blah blah, and she just goes,
so
there's
real.
So many more ways for dudes to ignore you now, like,
yes. Oh, I remember that. Yes, totally.
It's painfully true. Like, there's so many mixed signals and messages and like, and you know, either you're in a relationship or you're trying to be in one, you're sort of like trying to figure out from any clue anywhere, like, do they like me / do I like them? And you're just looking for clues anywhere you can.
And yeah, and it's just an obstacle course.
Yeah. So basically the podcast is us just trying to help each other /
We have guests, though. We have, like, expert guests that are helping. Our own therapist comes on. I legit fall apart just like I'm on this woman's couch.
Oh, no. She's better than she thinks she is. And also, we talk to, like, people that we would like to be friends with. Like, totally. We talk about their, you know, their experiences in relationships, what they want, what they are challenged by. And we're hoping that that sort of makes people essentially feel less alone in this thing, because you feel really alone and sort of mixed up and sad sometimes when you're trying to figure out what all this stuff is. And we just felt less alone by talking to each other about it.
So when you have listeners sort of pouring their hearts out to you, and I'm guessing that'll just start to happen more and more, how do you guys navigate that? Like, are you thinking of yourselves as giving advice or as just sort of helping people work through something?
I try to think of it like trying to be kind to a friend that I don't know very well yet.
Oh,
like,
that's really sweet.
Because there was a question that we had a couple weeks ago with Gabby that was from this young woman who to me sounded like probably a teenager, but we're not sure how old she was. But like, she had a lot of questions about these feelings that she was having for her best friend, and both of them identify as queer. And she just wanted to sort of know, like, what to do next. And my heart really went out to her because, like, I remember that. Yeah. I really remember being, like, 16, 17 and having those feelings for friends. And when I was in high school, it wasn't cool yet. I was pre-Glee, so it was not okay to be out yet or anything. So I tried to come at it with as much empathy as possible and less, like, here's what you should do, but, like, well, as your friend, here's what I hear and here's what I think.
But there's also an opportunity to, like, reply to that email personally. And
sure. In some ways, the show can only understand so much of the nuance of what's going on when it's just an email or a voicemail or something that you're responding to. But I think people will be able to find, like, the universal nugget of wisdom in that conversation you're having as a result, too. I mean, basically, any relationship problem any of us have, like, we can all learn from, I think. I remember I've been listening to Dan Savage's Savage Love podcast for years, it's like those stories. First of all, it's just like an entertaining, fun show to listen to, but it's sort of like a master's class in relationship ethics more than it really is about sex or dating. It's just like, how do you deal with other humans in your life?
Yes. How do you deal with other humans in your life? How can you best treat them, you know, while still maintaining your sense of self and not letting yourself feel like you're getting stepped all over or used or something, you know?
Yeah, we're not, like, experts in the traditional sense, but I think, like, we're trying to, like, be very authentic with ourselves and each other and our feelings.
We're navigating this. We're your new besties.
If there was just one thing that technology has changed about dating and relationships that you could sort of wave a magic wand and just not have to worry about, is there something where you'd be like, oh, man, it would just be so nice if this wasn't a thing?
God.
Like, to just go back to the good old pre-cell phone, pre-smartphone days.
Yeah, I feel like the burden of expectation, whether it's how quickly someone responds or, like, that they're going to be available to you 24/7 or, like, unspoken expectation that I think gets us all in our heads. It'd be great if we could just, like, make that go away.
It's hard to sort of say, like, I just want to go back in time because there are so many great things that the internet has given us, you know. The real thing I wish I could change is what Courtney said, like, the human element. I wish they were teaching in school some kind of, like, empathy classes about the internet and, like, the effect that your words and deeds have on other people, even though you're separate from when you act that way or say those things, you know.
Well, if we can't get a class in school, at least we can get everyone to listen to or watch Reality Bites, because I think you guys are going to be having those conversations there, and everyone should check it out. In just a minute, we're going to talk with Stephanie a little more about Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Stephanie, one of the reasons we are very excited to talk to you on Nerdette is Greta and I both are huge Brooklyn Nine-Nine fans. It has done so much to help fill the Parks and Rec shaped hole in our hearts that when that show ended, right, like we all were like, but where's the comedy full of heart and hilariousness gonna be in our week? And I feel like for me, that is definitely Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I watch it every week. And I just think you guys are doing a great job creating that sort of weird family that is really, I think, at the core of most of these workplace comedies. And I wonder, you know, how do you describe the show to people who haven't been watching it?
Usually what I say is think like a workplace comedy, but also with action and fun cop stuff and very weird archetypes. And people are like, what do you mean? And I'm like, you know, like the weird guy that you work with and like the really mean person that you work with and the super nerdy person that you work with and like the very strange, cold person that you work with. Like I sort of go through like the archetypes and people are like, oh, that sounds fun. And I'm like, yeah. And also, you know me. So now you should watch it because otherwise you're a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And your character in particular is, I mean, I think people who are hearing your voice, your real voice for the first time in this podcast are going to be very surprised because your character's voice is very different. I don't know if you can give us a taste of it for a second, maybe.
Yeah,
to...
she's super different. She's a lot deeper.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
And like very, very sort of dry and matter of fact and sort of
very.
You know, there's a lot of spastic people on the show, right? Whether it's, you know, the Andy Samberg character or some of the others.
You positively glow. How do you feel?
Great. I could smother somebody in their sleep with this thing. Pregnancy's dope.
Whoop, 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 whoop. That big old womb is not a weapon, okay? It's just an excuse to talk to your doctors, a.k.a. Charles and me, in private. If you need to chat, just schedule an appointment with Brent Kennedy, OBGYN.
And I'm Glenn Kennedy, OBGYN. We're twins, like property brothers, but for gynecology.
No, I said no to that idea. You are Isaac Schwartz, my older Jewish mentor, and you are Isabel Cortez. You're in for stabbing a man on the subway 46 times in the trachea.
Tight.
You know, there's a lot of like high strung folks in your precinct.
Yes.
And I feel like your character is sort of the steady as a rock, dry wit in the group.
Yeah. Still waters, man. There's always got to be one of those in the comedy family or duo or whatever. There's like the very
the straight man.
Yeah, straight man. That's what I want to say. The straight man. So I'm the straight woman.
Yeah, you're the straight man to a lot of very goofy characters for sure.
Yes.
You and Andre hold down the straight fort.
Yeah.
And this is a cast, it's, you know, it's been written about, it's been talked about a lot, that it is a more diverse cast than you sometimes see in this sort of show or in this genre of TV, where, you know, you have multiple African-American leads, multiple Latino leads in a way that I find really exciting as someone who is half Puerto Rican. I'm just like always like throwing my hands up with excitement when there's more than just sort of one of each kind of non-white person in a show.
Yes.
And so was that something that you think is a sign of changing times, or does it feel still special and different? Like, is it a unicorn show to have done that? Or do you think that that's just where everybody's going to be heading?
I think both. You know, when I was cast on the show, well, actually, right before I was cast, I had auditioned and, you know, I had like a Google alert on my computer and I saw that Melissa had been cast and I was so thrilled for her. But I was also like pretty upset because I thought there's no way like a network television show is going to cast two Latinas in their ensemble. It's just it's not going to happen. And so I was pretty devastated. And then like maybe the next day or the day after that, I got the call that I had booked it and I was like, what is happening? And then all during the pilot, shooting the pilot, because, you know, when you shoot a pilot, you don't know if the show's been picked up at all. You just shoot the pilot and like you cross your fingers and hope for the best. And I remember shooting the pilot and, you know, a lot of times in Hollywood, they'll shoot the pilot and then they'll go back to the drawing board and shoot the pilot again.
Yeah.
And Melissa and I were like, what if they turn one of us white? Because originally my character was written as white. Her name was Megan. And I was really worried about it. And like Dan Gore and Mike Schur are really dope guys. And they decided that we were who they wanted. And it didn't matter what color we were. Now, on the flip side of that, it did matter a lot to me because I hadn't grown up watching television where there was like a network comedy where there were that many people of color on it, and that it wasn't about that.
Yeah, that's, you know, what's so more great about it is it's not like,
right?
You are the token this and you are the token that. It's just,
right,
everybody is their weird selves, but it's not that it's not present in who the character is, but it's not like, oh, you are playing this type
this
of archetype that,
yeah,
is based
all
solely
your
on
jokes
your,
are based,
yeah,
on,
yeah, totally,
your ethnicity or a writer's maybe sometimes not correct view of your ethnicity, you know. So like,
yeah,
in that way I do feel like it is a bit of a unicorn, but on the other hand, you're watching television now, and we're seeing that more and more, which I think is – it's beginning to change. It's ushering in a new sort of era, I hope. I hope, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think I can only still think of maybe of network TV shows that have more than one
scandal.
You've got Shonda, you know, Shondaland is doing pretty well.
Shonda's the best, yeah.
Jane the Virgin, Shonda's I love, it. And it's like this beautiful portrait of all these really strong women in that show as well. But I think that might be about it still.
There's an NBC show, I forget the name of it, but America Ferrara is on it.
Oh, yeah, Superstore. Yeah, Superstore. She has a new show, yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about a workplace for a workplace comedy, it's usually some sort of generic office setting or something like that. But you guys are cops. And so I just wonder, like, how do cops react to seeing this sort of jokey or more jovial side of what it's like to be in a police station? Like, well, how do cops react to the show?
The cops that I have encountered that watch the show are so great because being a cop is quite a bit of an office job. I mean, yes, there's the street cops that are on the beat and stuff, but they also still have to fill out their paperwork. They still have to do the grindy part of it. And, like, I've talked to quite a few cops that are like, you guys are so funny. That's exactly how we are in the office, just screwing around and, like, trying to keep our minds off of, you know, because they've got pretty dark jobs.
Yeah.
And quite a few of the police officers that I've spoken to, there's a couple of retired ones that consult on our show, and there are quite a few that I've met in real life, but they all say the same thing, which is that the job is so dark and heavy that they have to bring light to it. So a lot of the time during the day, they're spending it trying to make each other laugh, which I thought was actually really sweet in a way and very much our show.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, too. I mean, you know, you hear cops or lawyers or doctors talk about TV shows and they're like, that's not like our job at all. But like you said, there are still paperwork moments and mundane moments in almost any profession. And so that is when people's personalities start to just interact as opposed to everybody just being too busy to think about what's happening next. But we're also in this moment in our culture where just the word police has become politicized, and it feels like a lot of times there's two parallel conversations happening in this country about people's relationship to law enforcement. And I wonder, you know, you guys probably film quite a ways ahead of when we're seeing every episode. And do you guys talk about that on set? Do you worry about or wonder about sort of what the moment or the climate's going to be as an episode comes out? If you guys are trying to, even in what is like a very funny, very intentionally comedic show, you know, what you're saying about police and police's relationship to a community?
I think the writers probably do a lot more discussing than we do, because I always think it's really interesting how people, and not you, Trisha, but like fans and stuff on Twitter or whatever will ask me, like, why doesn't Rosa get a girlfriend? Why doesn't Rosa do this? And I'm like, you guys, I don't write the show. Like, I show up at the table read, I read the script for the first time, and then the next week when we start shooting it, the script might be completely different. So I don't get to decide what my character does and doesn't do. That being said, if there's something blatant in the script that I feel is wrong or just reads to me like I'm very liberal, I'm like, if it reads to me like this is not the way that I want this character portrayed, this is not the interaction that I think that is sensitive to the time that we're living in, then I say something about it. But I really think our writers are doing an incredible job of navigating those very tricky waters. Yeah. Dan Gore especially, like, he's such a feminist. He's such a caring, wonderful person, and he's really sensitive to that stuff. I mean, if you watch our show, you hear it in the character of Jake all the time. He's the, like, most inclusive, least homophobic, most feminist, sort of, like, wonderful character to be, like, a white male lead on a show. So I can only hope that we're doing a good job, but it's really, some people just don't, straight up won't watch our show because it's about cops and they have like a thing about that. And, you know, I respect that decision. Like, there's nothing I can do about it.
I think too, though, that the show is doing such a good job of offering sort of a valve to release some of that pressure, right? Like all of the...
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to jump
no,
in.
Read my mind. You read my mind.
Yeah, because I think like we do have to laugh sometimes and like blow off a little steam sometimes, and the show can offer people a venue for that.
Yeah, and there are, I mean, in any job, there are bad people in that job and there are good people in that job. And I think what our show does really well is sort of focus a little light on a pretend world, albeit a pretend world, but a world in which these cops are good people. They are good at their core. They all want the same thing, which is justice, and they're fighting for the little guy all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So in that way, like, it is sort of nice to be able to turn on your TV and go like, oh, yeah, that's a fun little view into that world where there are good cops that really care about the people that they protect and serve.
All right, Stephanie and Courtney, thank you so much for joining us Under Debt. We are going to be listening to and watching Reality Bites. And of course, we're going to be watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine because it fills that Parks and Rec-shaped hole in our hearts.
Yay! Thank you for having
Great
us.
To virtually
that was awesome.
Meet you.
Bye, girl.
Bye, guys. Thanks to Stephanie Beatriz and Courtney Kosak. Be sure to check out Reality Bites. And if you're not watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you are seriously missing out.
Speaking of bites, that's my real clever segue.
It's actually pretty good.
Because it's time for homework that involves cookies.
That's in just a minute. Okay, guys, your homework this week comes from Dory Greenspan. She has a new cookbook out called Dory's Cookies, which is truly magical for a great many reasons. I feel like we need to discuss my relationship with cookies for just a minute, Trisha, because this is real. This is like a serious thing.
It may be the longest relationship in your life.
Well, other than like my mother, who is the person who makes these
but
cookies.
Who
so
got your love via cookies probably
yeah,
early
yeah,
on.
Totally, for sure. Yeah, and I talk about Mary Johnson cookies with Dory, so I feel like just some context would be useful. Mary Johnson is my mother, who, you know, I've talked about a little bit on the show before, but I don't know that I always talk about her by name. So I thought I would just tell you, we're talking about Mary Johnson, who is my mom. And she makes what I would argue are like the best cookies ever, which was a little weird to tell Dory, but I feel like she understood.
Well, and some people make one or two cookies really well. Yeah. Your mom seems to have a deep bench of really strong cookie game.
She does. She does.
There was the first year we were making this show, there was a Google form. Mm-hmm. Did you make it or did your brother Jacob make the form?
No, my brother made it. We all have a lot of strong feelings about cookies in the Johnson family household.
And so my understanding of this, Greta, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there was a question about what assortment of cookies would be the ideal assortment for Mary Johnson to make while you and Jacob were going home for Christmas.
Yep.
And, you know, reasonably, she only wanted to make four or five different kinds of cookies.
Yeah, I think she kind of like, I think she was at the point where she was like, listen, I'm not making a dozen cookies, so y'all got to pick them up. Right, I'm not making a dozen kinds of cookies, so y'all got to like choose amongst yourselves and let me know. And she had done sort of like an informal poll, you know, she was like, Greta, like, what are your like
must-haves?
Yeah, exactly.
Can't miss cookies.
But Jacob took it upon himself to create a survey so that we could all weigh in. And
although in this case, meaning you and Jacob, there's only two Johnson
well, and my
children.
Dad. Yeah, I mean, my dad's got cookie feelings too, Trisha, let's be honest.
But you let me into the Google form as a ringer. And so there were cookies that Jacob knew were your favorite cookies that suddenly had two votes.
Right,
there was
right.
voter fraud.
It was cookie voting fraud.
2014.
It was cookie voting fraud. Well,
we
it just goes to show
mind.
You, you know, and my mother has used the term hearts and minds when it comes to her cookies and the work that they can do. Because they are just like, these are magical cookies. And she vacuum packs them and mails them to me
from Alaska.
And they're still fresh and delicious and amazing. You've had them.
They're delicious.
I mean, these are pretty incredible cookies. My boyfriend, the first time he tried them, I went home last year in December and he sent a note along with me kindly requesting 100 cookies.
100 cookies.
Yeah, she laughed at him a lot.
So anyway, these are the cookies
real.
We're talking about with Dory, who is a cookie professional.
Yes.
But Mary Johnson ain't no slouch. That's all we're saying. Let's hear Dory's homework as it relates to holiday cookies.
I have given my friends Mary Johnson cookies and they have just completely blown people's minds. Like very consistently, people are just like, oh my God, these are the best cookies I've ever had. And, you know, mom likes to say it's because of all the love she puts in them, which is not fat free, but still worth it because it's love.
Love is never fat free.
No, love is not fat free, but that's why it's so good, right? But I was just wondering, like, I want to start by just what you think it is about cookies. Like, why are they just so magical and good always?
First of all, I'm glad you believe that they're magical and good because I'm a believer. I believe they are magical. And I think there's something about cookies. They're both they're both generous and selfish. So as, you know, as a baker, you know, I agree with your mother that we bake love into things because we always bake to share.
Mm-hmm.
And with cookies, you always bake a batch. So you're always baking to be able to give them to someone. So as a baker, cookies are really generous. As an eater, you know, mine, mine, all mine. That cookie is mine. It's a one-to-a-person treat. And there's something so nice about having something all to yourself.
Do you feel like you can tell something about a person based on what their favorite cookie is?
I could tell something about a person if he or she didn't have a favorite cookie.
And what is that, that they're a Scrooge?
That would be so. I would either feel sorry for that person or move on to the next person. You have to love cookies.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of how I feel too. So what's your favorite cookie in the book? Is that just like the most difficult question?
Yes. Yes, it is the most difficult question. So, okay, there are 170 recipes.
Wow.
I wouldn't have put any of them in here if I didn't love them. But I do have favorites. I don't have a favorite.
Mm-hmm, that's
although
fair.
The World Peace Cookie, which is the cookie on the cover, I have a real soft spot for, both because the recipe was given to me years ago by Pierre Hermé, the great French pastry chef who's also a friend. So I love it for that. I love it that a friend of mine renamed it World Peace. And I really do believe if everyone in the world had this cookie, right? Peace, peace, peace. And it's chocolate. And it has salt. And it has dark chunks in it. So, yeah, it's a great cookie.
So one thing we like to do on Nerdette that I think would be especially fun coming from you is we like to assign our listeners homework.
Yes, I have a good homework assignment.
Yay.
So a few months ago, I started a project called hashtag cookies and kindness.
Oh, yay.
Because I was thinking, things are kind of wobbly these days. We've had a tough year. And the way I said that I get such pleasure out of baking cookies and sharing them, I wanted other people to have that pleasure. So I started the project as, oh, it was voluntary. But now that it's a homework assignment, oh, yes, 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 yes. Okay, here's your assignment. Bake, 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 and share what you've baked.
Hmm.
Either share your cookies with someone you know and love, or surprise someone with cookies, or drop them off anonymously as, well, would people really eat? Yeah, drop them off anonymously. Go to the fire department.
I hope so, yeah.
Right? Find a home for your cookies. Teacher Appreciation Day, Neighbor Appreciation Day. Bake and share, and then post a picture of either your cookies or the surprised recipient, the sharee, with the hashtag cookies and kindness. And if you and I get tagged, then we'll be able to see. So I'm at Dori Greenspan.
And we are at Nerdette Podcast.
Right. And then we can both see what's going on in the world of cookies and kindness.
Cookies and kindness is such a perfect time for the holiday, too. It's great.
Homework.
Yay. Dori Greenspan, thank you so much for coming on Nerdette.
It's been so much fun. Thank you.
The book is called Dori's Cookies, Do Your Homework. Make some cookies and give them away. It's fun.
Delicious, delicious homework.
The show is produced by us, Trisha Bobita and Greta Johnson, along with Joe Dassault and Justin Bull.
Our intern is Annie Nguyen.
Our executive producer is Joel Meyer.
I bet all of them would like some cookies, Greta. Wink, nudge.
You know, I was thinking
we
about
have
making
some nodding
cookies
and winking
next week,
happening.
But now it's not going to be a surprise if I do it. Would you like ginger cookies or almond butter chocolate chip cookies next week?
What?
Think about it.
Ginger cookies.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about too.
But I want them to be gingerbread ladies, not gingerbread men.
Can they just be round? I was just
oh yeah,
that's
fine too.
Like, man, you're getting picky now.
Then I can stack three of them and make a snowman.
You can't. What I really need to find is that corgi cookie cutter you got me. I don't know where it is.
Listen, if you're going to not take care of the corgi cookie cutters I buy you, then I'm not going to keep buying you weird 3D printed cookie cutters on Etsy.
No, please do. Please do.
Subscribe to us on iTunes or follow us on NPR One. Thanks to Rena Rifkin for the 5 stars on iTunes and the lovely review. It's okay that you're not doing all the homework. It's like a master's degree. You can do it sort of at your own pace. It's like an online part-time master's.
Yeah, man, do it as you please. It'll be okay. Your final grade is still an A, especially if you give us 5 stars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We will take bribes in the form of stars in exchange for you not being able to do all the homework. Find us on Twitter at NerdettePodcast, Instagram, Facebook, Goodreads. We're in all those places and happy to talk with you about all the nerdy things there. We also have a newsletter if you want to keep up with us, know what's coming up on the show in the weeks to come, know about events that we have going on here in Chicago, know about just what we're reading on the internet. Sign up for that newsletter at nerdettepodcast.com.
Nerdette is a production of WBEZ Chicago, where there are delightful podcasts for nerds of all stripes. You can find out more at WBEZ.org.
Our theme music is by Poddington Bear.
Do your homework.
Do your homework.
Man, I really need to find that cookie cutter.
Do your homework. That's your homework. Because I now don't want ginger cookies.
Are you mad?
Unless they're ginger corgs. Oh, ginger corgs. Ginger corgs. Oh my God. I want ginger corgi cookies.
Ginger corgi cookies, it does have a really good ring to it.
It's like rubber baby buggy bumpers.
It is. It really is. Okay, I'll try and make it happen.
That's your homework.
Yes, you made that clear.
Nerdette is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. Join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic HBO original limited series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.